podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Talk Skills Podcast. My name is Simon. Today I'm joined by Billy. Say hello, Billy.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Very well. Hello, Jed.
Hello, mate.
All right. How you doing, buddy? Just make sure your microphone sounds okay.
I'm very...
Because obviously, if you're wondering why there wasn't an episode last week, it was completely Jed's fault. Totally Jed's fault. Intentionally done.
I don't know what happened. Something got inside my audio and just absolutely ruined it. I think it's because I made so many good points. The public just couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
Like FBI or something, you know?
It must have been, mate.
I got hacked and that information could just never be shared with the public.
It's just too important. Right. Let's start with this weekend. We'll touch on last weekend's football, but we'll mainly focus on this weekend's football. And I have just watched a big game. Jerry's just watched a big game, but Billy, I believe, was at the pub somewhere and did not watch the game. And the game where I'm referencing is Brentford have just beaten Manchester United 4-0. And that's a fairly conservative scoreline because it was 4-0 before the break. And I thought it could have probably should have went higher. Jed, I'll start with you, obviously, being a fellow football fan, actually watched the football. Give us your thoughts on it.
It was great to watch, really, from a neutral perspective.
Yeah.
I couldn't really believe what I was watching, to be fair, because it was just sort of like, oh, Brentford have attacked. Oh, they've scored. And it's a De Gea howler. And it's like, oh, they've scored again. Oh, they fucking scored again. It was like, it's unbelievable. Like, every time they went forward, they just looked really dangerous. And United just couldn't handle them at all. I think they made some really good points on Sky about Brentford's work rate and it just being that much better than United's. And that was, I think, an absolutely massive, massive part of this game. Brentford just absolutely ran their bollocks off. And United just didn't really know how to cope with it. And then you factor in the errors that have been made by De Gea. He's cost them at least two goals, really.
And that's
massive. You know, those are the differences. And then once they're in that sort of, you know, once Brentford are in that sort of mood, you know, they don't mess about, really, do they? So, yeah. I was really, really impressed with them, to be fair. I'm sort of regretting the shout that I made the other week saying that I think they're going to go down this season. So far, that one might not be right. But, you know.
I think it's interesting that Manchester United had 66% possession and just did absolutely nothing with it. There was a couple of glimpses where Manchester United could have probably made something, but the willingness to run off the ball from Brentford, I mean, it's not every day you can go ahead and put Manchester United to the sword. And I think if the opportunity is there and you're Brentford, you are maybe running with an extra yard. And I think... Yeah, it was individual errors cost. I mean, there's obviously the Christian Eriksen one. Is he completely to blame for that? You know, he's got a player very close to him. Maybe he's not the best pass for De Gea to pick, but nonetheless, he's obviously involved in that. But that really only explains two of the goals. The other two goals are completely... It's a fantastic counter-attack. Fantastic counter-attack from Brentford. Superb. I think it was Jensen in his own box. Kind of picks up the ball nice and calm, and then he picks out Tony. In a wide position and Manchester United's half, and it's just like a first time pass into the path of Mbeumo, and it's brilliant.
A brilliant, brilliant goal. The control from Mbeumo to just sort of set himself and then he just tucks it away. It's a beautiful goal. Really, really good goal. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, right, second season syndrome obviously hit Sheffield United pretty hard and it's hit other clubs quite hard as well. But I'm looking at this Brentford side now and I want to say I'm pretty much sold that they are the real deal. They are the genuine article. They're aggressive. They're extremely fit. Their physicality is great. A lot of tall players in their side, and they really make use of that. And you can see that in the set piece where pretty much all the set pieces where they dominate Manchester United. I'll come on to this point in a little bit, but that takes into question Ten Hag's team selection that we'll come on to because Brentford are a particularly physical team. And I think, I'm pretty sold. I think there's a lot of quality in this team, and I think they could really... They're united as well, and maybe I think they use the momentum they've got now. They could set themselves as a Premier League side.
There's definitely the potential for them to do like something like what Brighton have done and kick on. You know, a team that plays good football, kick on, establish themselves in the league and build from there. So they have got the potential to do that. What I think that they struggled with last season, obviously, is their away form. Home form was great. Away form was poor. I don't know whether that's going to carry over into this season or not, but it's things like that that make me not 100% convinced that they're going to, you know, absolutely fly this year. They did actually ask Ivan Toney after the game as well about second season syndrome. I think the interviewer just went, "No second season syndrome then." And he just went, "What's that?" I've got a feeling that that might come back and bite him at some point in the season.
Yeah.
When he's gone on a goal drought for about 10 games.
10 games without a goal, you know.
Well, I've never heard of second season syndrome.
No, I quite like his confidence. If he can keep the head screwed on, obviously he's got those issues with just what Toney does away from football in terms of just like opening that big fat mouth, you know. And he's just saying the wrong things consistently. But, you know, I quite like his confidence. He was great today.
He was
really, really excellent. He just made Maguire and Martinez's absolute biatch as well. He was having everything, mate. He was just nothing going the way of the centre backs today. Absolutely superb. I totally agree, Jed. If they can just kind of use this momentum, then make incremental improvements, they could probably end up in a situation where they are really thought of as an established team in this league. That aren't maybe picked to go down at the beginning of seasons. Very much sold. Like, going on to Manchester United, this was the wrong team selection for me completely. Given the physicality of Brentford, they've got a lot of tall, really strong, well-built players all over the pitch, in the midfield, up front, you know, and especially in defence. I think Martinez, if you're going to play him, I'd have probably thought put him in a back three, you know, where he's not got a whole lot of pressure. He doesn't have, you know, Ivan Toney, who's stronger than him, wider than him, taller than him, just climbing all over him. I think he was unlucky. And he was when did he come off? He did come off, didn't he? I want to say he came off, yeah. I can't remember when he came off, but
half-time, he did come off. I think, mate.
Yeah, hooked off.
At half-time. He brought Varane on at half-time.
Yeah, that would have been the right decision to go with. If you were going to go with a back four, that probably would have been the right decision to go with.
I think that a lot of people have commented saying, you know, he's not very tall for a centre-half. And but I think that if you're a clever centre-half, you don't necessarily need to be the tallest player, but you do need to have some height against a team that's a big side. Like Brentford have got a lot of tall players in their team throughout, like across the pitch. They've got big forwards, big midfielders, centre backs are massive. So that they're going to be dangerous. And I just think if you're losing, you know, half a foot basically off your defence, essentially from like in the form of Martinez, it might not be the best way to go. I think he'd probably do well as like a holding midfielder because like he can clearly play. He's played for Ajax. He's obviously you know, good with his feet.
I'm not doubting his ability. I think he was put in a difficult situation today.
Definitely.
So I'm not writing him off.
Having said that, though, I mean, even, you know, it doesn't matter how tall your defenders are. If your goalkeeper's letting in an easy save from 30 yards out, that's a bigger issue for me. that first goal that they conceded is an absolute howler from De Gea. There's no escaping that. Near post, he's let it go underneath him. Like, it's a simple save. For a goalkeeper that plays for Manchester United, it should be a simple save anyway. What I do rate is that he came out after the game and just went, "Yeah, hold my hands up. Like, I've probably cost us the game here." I don't think he completely did, but he definitely played a big part in it. And that to me, I think, is a bigger issue than your centre-half not being tall enough.
I think that. I completely agree. Individual errors like that, you're just going to get nothing from a game if you're having to. I mean, in my opinion, I think he's only really got officially blamed for the first goal, but I think the second one he picked up.
The second goal was definitely his fault as well. He's just played the ball to a man on the edge of his own box who's being pressed.
I think he thinks Ericsson's coming in to receive the ball. Ericsson is coming in to pull that player away from the midfield.
Yeah.
So Tahir can pick a pass, pick an easy. Ericsson is dragging a player away out of position, making him follow him.
He
doesn't want that ball. He doesn't want a ball in his own box, facing his own goal, with no time to turn, with that fucking midfielder a yard away from him. He does not want that ball. I don't know what's like hard about that.
Three Brentford players all pressing in on the United box. There's like two either side of him, one behind him. He doesn't want that ball. Fucking get rid of it. What are you doing? It's completely the wrong pass.
It's, yeah.
He's De Gea is definitely at fault for that goal
yeah,
as well.
But that goes
the
on.
Other,
that,
the
yeah.
others, maybe the corner, you know, you've got a short centre-half, so you need more height in there.
They've got shot
the,
everything,
the last
though.
Goal,
like,
the
shot
last goal, they got caught
everything.
On the break. So,
you've got fucking yeah. Maguire and Ronaldo trying to cover the entire box. Even fucking De Gea's tiny. You know what I mean? Jeez, if there was like... Do you know, of all the games to drop Scott McTominay, maybe not
yeah,
this one, you know,
yeah.
like not this one, any other one, like, you know, you don't go out to play Burnley this season, you don't need to worry about that. This is the the team that's going to win those set pieces, win those aerial drills, you know. I think it's just wrong from back to front. I don't know why they didn't just go with a back three. If you're that determined to play Lisandro Martinez, then you just
help
go with
him
a
out.
Back. Yeah, yeah.
Like I say, I think he'd be better in like a holding midfield role. Slap
yeah.
him in the middle; he can just shuttle across. And
has he not played as a holding midfielder before as well with Ajax?
I want to see. Yeah,
I think he's a bit like that player that can play as a holding midfielder, but if really needed, he can play as a defender.
I think that there's a lot of sort of like common traits now between the two roles. Like you've got your centre halves who play the ball quite a lot, and your central midfielders are obviously a tackle, and that's obviously quite an important skill to have as a defender. So I think you can, like, there's a lot of players who can fit into both roles. It's just where they get played. I think like you got to utilise them the right way, haven't you? And I think putting, like you said, so like putting a short person up against a team full of giants, yeah, it's like the last line of defence basically before the keeper, it's not the right call.
Really, like the only two players in that team that were capable of defending a set piece was Ronaldo and Maguire. I don't know how that didn't get flagged up at any point. You know, why did nobody? Not even Ten Hag got an assistant.
Maybe
a coach,
Ten.
The fucking
maybe,
janitor.
Maybe Ten Hag.
You know? The kit man. Anybody? Just put, you might want to just put someone else on that can maybe head the ball away at some point. You know.
Maybe Ten Hag just thinks, yeah, we won't give away any corners. Yeah,
we're going to have so much of the ball.
Yeah, we'll play not to concede set pieces. Then we're fine.
Do you think Ten Hag didn't realise quite how good and how different the Premier League was going to be to the
100%.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. I think he'd be looking at Brighton. He'd be looking at this Brentford side and just thinking, right, this is teams that I'm expected to beat. And even putting individual errors aside, both times were outplayed in every department.
I think as well, the Martinez signing has something to do with Ten Hag kind of thinking that it was a bit too easy as well, or not quite as big a difference. Not easy as such, but I suppose the difference, he may have thought that it was a bit bigger, that thought it may have been a bit smaller than what it is. I think that signing as well, because he must have thought making that signing, if he's going to be playing centre-half most of the time, he must have thought that we're going to have 70% possession every game. We're not really going to be pressed too much. There's not that much physicality in comparison. We've got big strikers here in Holland. He's managed to do it for me at Ajax. Why not bring him in? And it's two games in, it's just not worked out, has it?
Yeah,
I mean,
we're only two
games in at the end of the day, but...
Maybe slightly underestimated the condition of some of these Premier League sides as well in the running. When anybody really talks about the Premier League, the word that kind of comes to mind is maybe intensity of the running that's done in that league. And that's
I was gonna
almost,
say,
almost threaded into the league itself. Because
I was going to say the opposite of that. So I think that there's sometimes a view of the Premier League that's a little bit slower, and that, you know, the ball gets played on the floor quite a lot, and that's it. I don't know whether he was thinking about that, but like it's certainly moving the other way. But like there are times in Premier League games where not a lot happens, and there's a lot of sideways passing between both sides, and the ball stays on the floor. I don't know whether he was thinking that maybe, you know, why it might be a little bit easier for him. But then you've got teams like Brighton and teams like Brentford who come and make it really difficult.
So my point was going to be
underestimated that.
I think Manchester United have had the bulk of possession in both those games. They had 66%, almost 67% possession today, and Brentford didn't tire, and they pressed the entire match. Right, that's I mean, that's one of the perks of having the ball all the time. Yeah. One of having the ball all the time is you don't need to run in much and you force the opposition to run and eventually tire them out and break them down. Pep Guardiola is the master of this because he starves teams to the point of, like, when he's up at that 75% possession and you've not had the ball for 15 minutes, that's demoralising, you know. But I think if we look at sort of pressing stats in the way that is very much the fashion of the Premier League right now. I think any team that's having success in the Premier League is a pressing side. So I think there is a lot of intensity in this league. And I think when teams just don't, they're used to, especially like when you're playing those top six and the teams that are possession based, you have to get used to living without the ball. Players in the Premier League, I feel like, are comfortable now without the ball. You know, Brentford can go and spank Manchester United 4-0 with 33% possession and be very, very happy, you know, with what they've done with the ball, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And have you seen the upcoming fixtures as well? It doesn't get much easier.
They've got Liverpool next, haven't they?
They've got Liverpool next, and then they've got what you would think is a winnable game with Southampton. And then it just continues. It's Liverpool, Southampton, Leicester, Arsenal, Palace, Leeds, Man City. That goes up until game week 9. They're not easy games at all, are they? Like that Southampton.
I don't think there's an easy game for Manchester United. No. Normally, you'd be like looking on the horizon for a Norwich or something. It's like, it's not... Back-to-back defeats, you're thinking, where the fuck is Norwich, man?
Yeah, where have they gone?
Don't worry, folks, we'll be back next year.
You know what? I'm really surprised that I haven't actually seen any sort of United fans blaming their kit for the defeat today.
I have already seen that. So have you,
they look like a bunch of stewards, basically, and it's a sunny day. I've not seen anyone so far saying, oh, I couldn't see each other because it was so bright. But it's coming.
It's coming,
though.
Too much yellow. That was my nothing to do. Nothing to do with the horrendous performance.
It's been raining.
Anyway, Manchester United will face Liverpool a week on Monday, I think. I think that's been big trouble.
It's only going one way, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the big trouble. Depending, obviously, how Liverpool haven't started the league particularly well. Fulham gave them a very, very difficult match, obviously, Monday night. They're going to play Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace, a hard-running side, very much like Brentford, I think, in a lot of ways, in terms of like how aggressive they are in the opposition's final third. Liverpool obviously play a very, very high line. So we'll see what happens. I think Liverpool should come good. I think that over the past sort of three, four seasons, there has been games like this where Liverpool have bounced back almost immediately afterwards. Man City have a habit of doing this as well, where something does it and then the next team gets absolutely obliterated. I hope that's the way it goes for Liverpool on Monday. We're going to move on though, Billy Boy, and we're going to talk about a game that you did watch today. You watched your Villa. They got 3 points. Finally. You must be chuffed.
Oh, man. My mood could not be further apart from what it was this time last week. It was just... Oh, man. It was just so good to see such a big reaction from last week, you know. We were so much better. A lot of people were negative going into the game, understandably so, but a lot of people were negative because of the lineup as well. The two up front, the Coutinho in behind, a lot of people, including myself, thought Coutinho should have been dropped for Buendia. But it just worked out perfectly. It was brilliant. Tyro Mings back as well, who
had an excellent game.
Phenomenal.
Excellent.
I'm one of his biggest critics. I'll hold my hands up. And he was just unbelievable. And I think for the large majority of that 85 minutes before our second goal, I think we were just fantastic. The defence didn't really have to do an awful lot. Martinez was fantastic for the final 10-15 minutes, 5-10-15, whatever. It was just a really good overall performance, you know. Danny Ings and Watkins linking up well. I think Watkins could have put it to bed just after they got their goal back. Just that first touch just took it away from him and he was stretching, I think.
Poor first touch in the box, isn't it? He just closed that angle. He had a decent angle where he receives the ball. If he just kind of, maybe if he cuts into his right,
I think
got a better angle. You know,
first touch and a little dink over the keeper, and it's 3-1 back to thinking that it's game over.
And the playback, I clocked his face after it, and it was a, it was an expression of like, ah, come on, you know. I think he'd known that. He's obviously, you talked about this in the preseason, Billy, of Ollie Watson, Ollie Watkins working on
Wally
his finishing. Ollie Watkins working on his finishing, and all over preseason, because he knew that was the aspect of his game he most had to improve. And I think when he does stuff like that, you know, that's, he's picked the wrong option. You know, he's seen his face.
For that chance in particular, I think it all just comes down to that first touch. A more composed first touch, and he probably certainly has a better chance at putting it in the back of the net. But you look at him, the first touch that he took, it just took it away from him. And then the shot that he had, he was stretching for it. So it's never really a clear-cut opportunity when you're stretching for the shot, is it really? But
I think he got two assists, so he still had a very strong game.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He's just sensational. You know, that's what Ollie Watkins is.
He kind of complements Danny Ings in that way, because Danny Ings doesn't really offer you that. That's not Danny Ings. Danny Ings is the opposite of Watkins
in
terms
finisher,
of like,
isn't he? That poacher.
Yeah, he just needs that. I mean, you can even look at Danny Ings. I put it in the chat. I was like, that is Danny Ings' goal written all over it. It's like, it's a bit of a half chance. He's picked the ball up. He's got someone right in front of him. He needs to kind of cut. It's not the best angle at all. The keeper's got time, and it's, but he still manages to bury it just because he's finishing. It's just, he's not even looking at the goal either. It's just instinct.
No, he just knows
some,
where
some
it is.
Some strikers just have that in their brain where it's like, they just know where the goal is, know where to hit it, know how to hit it, you know? And Danny Ings is very much that player.
You know, one of my favourite things about that goal is how it hit the camera just perfectly in the middle. It was just the most satisfying thing.
As long as aiming for it.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's, but it's, if he was aiming
the
for it, he'd have
smashed
it.
It's
a great goal.
I thought it came off the post at first, and then you rewatch it back and it's like, oh, it's hit the camera.
stuff.
But yeah, getting back to the overall performance, it was just so much better than last week. And then we was hanging by a thread for the last 5 minutes. Luca Dean's, I'll tell you what, this stat's fantastic. Luca Dean scored for Everton playing for Aston Villa today at Villa Park. Last season at Villa Park, Luca Dean scored for Aston Villa playing for Everton.
There you go.
Unbelievable.
What's that?
But yeah,
he's done that on purpose.
Oh, aye.
Oh, no, absolutely.
100%.
How did I get my name in the history books? Is that just slightly above average left back?
It's like you know, the Everton, it's the Luca Dean show.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I'm a decent left back. I'm a good left back. I could always play in the Premier League, I think, till probably when I retire. But how am I getting my name in the history books? You know?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Absolutely.
Look at Dean. I thought it was actually okay.
It was just unfortunate. I think it won't be being behind him. Obviously, the presence of him, it just didn't help. And I think he tried to flick it away, but didn't really get the connection that he wanted either. But it's just one of them that happens in football, isn't it? Unfortunately, and fortunately, we didn't concede again.
What did you think of the shape? Because it's a bit of a throwback, this. I mean, it used to be that everybody played a diamond, didn't it? Everybody played a diamond in midfield. And it's, I think, might have been the only team to play one this match week. What were your thoughts on the shape? Do you think you complimented the players that were on the pitch? I think he's looked much better with the front two and Coutinho behind, and especially with Bendia coming. I think when Bendia come on, you're like, whoa, right, okay, that now I see really the potential of that side.
Yeah, just last season when we played two up front with either Buendia or Coutinho behind, that's when we got the most joy. I think it was at that point then, once we were pretty much confirmed that we were safe, he then wanted to change it up, experiment a little bit, which is probably why we finished where we did. I think if we'd have kept on playing the two up front, we would probably have finished maybe a little bit higher. So I was happy to see it back because of that reason. We'd played well with it before, and it worked again. So I think it'd be crazy to not stick with it for the foreseeable, really. I still think Gerrard would prefer and would like to play that 4-3-3 with the inverted wingers. As you saw last week, I just don't think we've got the players to play it at the minute. And while we're getting the joy that the two strikers are having, I think it'd be silly not to.
It's got to be, especially at this stage, as you say, it's got to be what puts points in the board.
And that first 3 points was just is crucial today, because you come away with even just a draw and you think you just need that first win, don't you? To get it on the opening day is ideal. But if not, you need to get it on game week two. And to get a draw or something, then we're going into Crystal Palace. And you know what Crystal Palace are like. It's such a close game. They're such a good, well-drilled team. You're thinking, well, we're not going to win here, probably. And then we're going on to, I think, Arsenal, Leicester, Man City. They're the next three after that. And you're like, hang on, we're not going to win at all here. Where are the points going? You know, Gerrard gets pressure on top of him, even more pressure on top of him. And it can swallow people up, you know, so... That win today was just so, so important for everyone to just calm down and to kind of remind everyone that we are actually capable of winning a Premier League game.
Maybe just on the formations, maybe you play that 4-3-3 in games where you're probably not going to have as much of the ball. It's just to sort of pack the midfield out a little bit more and then you can potentially hit someone on the break with the wingers. I don't know, like... Mm. Potentially only... against Bournemouth, like you say, it wasn't the right move.
Well, that's the thing. Where are you going to fit Leon Bailey? Where are you fitting Leon Bailey in that diamond? Because you're not dropping Ings, you're not dropping Watkins. Exactly. And you've got that's an expensive player there who showed a lot of quality when he came on as well, Leon Bailey.
I think it suited us, Leon Bailey coming on kind of when he did and all of the injuries and kind of hanging on by a thread, because we then had that pace to lump it up. We had Leon Bailey, we had Ollie Watkins up there. We could have gone on the counter-attack, which is what we ultimately ended up changing to. So I think being able to do things like that with the players that we're bringing on off the bench is massive for us.
I think
that 4-3-3, like, you're not going to play two up front against Man City, are you? Like, because you're not going to give them the chances. So you're going to drop.
We saw it on the last day of the season.
You're going to have a block of five potentially across the midfield.
Probably.
Like, you're going to try and, like, I think that it's good to have options, isn't it? So you play your diamond in your games that you think you can win with your two up top, and then you switch it around and you go a bit more defensive when you've got a team who you know are going to have more of the ball and going to make it more difficult for you.
I must say, I thought Coutinho as well was fantastic today defensively. Like, the tracking back, the getting involved, the making of tackles, I thought he was brilliant.
It's probably worth noting, because it's not something you normally associate with Coutinho.
Yeah, I think 7 minutes in as well, something like that, he got a booking, which kind of made me a bit nervous, and probably another reason as to why he came off.
Yeah,
it got to that point where just a loose leg or something, you know, players are tired, a little loose leg, and you're sent off. We're down to 10 men, only 1-0 up as well at that point, and you really are hanging by a thread. But yeah, when Deer came on against tired legs, 65 minutes or so, he was just fantastic, wasn't he? He was really good.
That's a good thought.
Everton came close. I think I like the look of that back three, that Cody, Holgate and Tarkowski. I think they played actually quite well. As a free. I think young Nathan Patterson, Scotland
tough
international,
to break down.
Did very well as well. They were just lacking up front, just severely lacking bodies up front. You could see some glimpses of Demario Gray and even Dwight McNeil. I think Gordon was not particularly great, but he's playing out of position. You can't really hold it against him. I mean, did he just go with a Solomon Rondon from the start? He seemed to be maybe more effective.
Why not?
Come on.
Why is he leaving that man on the bench? Get him on the pitch.
I think
Solomon Rondon has more than 20 minutes in him.
Rondon's just there with the shades on. Like, yeah, you're not going to bring me on.
You need me. I think Lampard said before the game that it was because of lack of minutes in pre-season or something like that.
lack of minutes. What minutes he's played on minutes he's got left. 8 minutes he's got left. I think he's got about 200 minutes left in his career. I'm not going to waste
him. I'm going to waste him away to Villa.
Lampard's there like, yeah, you know, he was sunbathing, you know, I couldn't get him away from the swimming pool, but no, seriously though, he's had a lack of minutes in the
pre-season. Oh man.
That was a great impression, to be fair, Jeff.
Yeah. Well done, well done. I will be a central midfielder again, you'll love to see it. He's one of the only places he's not played. The only position he's not played, I think, is in the back three, you know, in a centre back position, which I think we all want to see. That and then goalie.
It's coming.
If Pickford ever gets a red card, it's got to be Iwobi that goes in it. Just to tick off another position he's played for Everton. Righto. Let's look at some other games from today. Southampton came back against Leeds to get a point. Very surprising. James Ward-Prowse wasn't involved in any of them, to the detriment of my football fantasy team, which is not gone well today. But we'll have an FPL episode in the beginning of the week. Yeah,
that's an understatement.
Not gone well.
Jesus, I wonder why.
Not gone well. Must try harder. As the feedback I'm giving the FPL players. We'll have an FPL episode.
Right over the head, didn't it?
I heard it, mate. I heard it. It's good.
We will have an FPL episode coming straight as soon as the match week is finished. We'll give our final standings. I've still got 5 players left to play, so it's not all too bad, boys. We're going to have a lot of FPL content this year. I hope whoever's getting involved enjoys it.
Three of us are taking it seriously, and then Simo's along for the ride.
I will say this though. I am still top of the draft. The one that matters, you know. I'm not just competing. Like, I don't care where I come when I'm just competing with random people. You know, I just care about beating yous, you know. That's all I want to do. Right, anyway, I also have Behind the Screams, which is just going to be a sort of non-football related show. It's just the lads. Pop that later in the week. But we'll talk about what were we talking about? Southampton Leeds. Yes. Ralph Hasenhüttl, strangely linked to being sacked, it looks like, but like with an unhappy dressing room. But it's not something I massively associate with a man, to be honest. But his team did well to come back against Leeds here.
He's got to have had unhappy dressing rooms before at Southampton, surely.
I know, but they're Southampton, I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, but at the same time, I don't like that with him. I don't see the friction, you know.
But no, to be fair, like, you never hear stories about like the players running the dressing room at Southampton, do you? It's always you know, your Man Uniteds and stuff that's said about.
Mm.
But at the same time, like you've got to wonder like whether now is the biggest challenge that he's faced at the club. You know, surely coming bouncing back from 9-0s. In the past is like a bigger challenge, and if he was going to get sacked over anything, it would be that, not the situation that they're currently in, which is just they've started the season with a couple of draws, with one draw and a defeat obviously last week, but that was against a very good Spurs side. So like, I don't know, it seems a bit weird. It seems, if they are going to sack him, it seems like a weird time to sack a manager 2 games into the season.
I think though Southampton are playing a dangerous game in terms of letting players go and maybe not necessarily replacing those players with equal or near quality, you know. And even linked with players away like Shea Adams, I think who has been decent for them, you know, that, I think that weakens them as well. And it was who they were playing against Leeds today who were linked to them. We'll come on to Leeds.
How Everton are you, as well.
Yeah, linked to Everton as well. He would surely be an upgrade for Everton, you know. Sure. Only got Solomon Rondon in front of you. Oh. How am I going to get in this side? You know? Where am I getting my minutes? You know? I think I put out the impression I don't like Solomon Rondon. I very much like Solomon Rondon. I'm a big fan of him as a player. Does the job.
You're saying this because you like him.
Yeah.
You're making fun of him because you like him.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to ask you, boys, what are your thoughts on this new Jesse Marsh side? Played quite well, but I don't know. Did they win last? Yeah, they did win.
They won the last minute goal, pretty much, wasn't it?
They're coping well with the loss of Phillips and Rafinha so far. But whether they Whether that continues over the season or not remains to be seen. I don't see Leeds being any higher than like 12th this season. You know,
I think 12th would be a massive achievement.
Yeah, but I think snap your hands off of that.
I think they just need to sort of have a season under Marsh and let him sort of fully bring in his sort of style of play and then go from there. But yeah, like I say, the biggest success for them so far is just not completely capitulating after losing those players.
Absolutely.
Right, let's look at the table, boys. On you go, Billy.
No, I was just going to say it's going to be interesting to see how the Americans really fit into the Leeds way. Because I mean, Aronson already looks like quite a decent player as well, and the Jesse Marsh little American union kind of thing that they've got going on there. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out and whether Aronson, who's supposed to be very highly rated, really kicks on and reaches his potential, whether it be with Leeds or whether he moves on or something like that.
I hope Leeds just keep getting more and more American.
Yeah.
You know, I hope it's just like
US and international team. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean? Like in 10 years' time, I hope Jesse Marsh is still there and it's just all Americans. It's like, yeah, we were, you know, trying to turn this franchise around. You know, it's like
the best thing ever. They've just got blokes walking around in the stands with popcorn. Hot dogs everywhere. It's like,
before every game, like, it's like, oh, yes, see.
The Yellow Road halftime show. It's just like t-shirt cannons and stuff.
Oh, it's happening at some point, isn't it? Yeah. It's too good for it to not happen.
Pulisic to Leeds in 6 years. Stuart, for
Stuart Dallas just goes full on Dallas Cowboy. And every time they score, he's just got a pistol out.
Yeah.
Guns are now legalized in Leeds.
A horrific rise in school shootings in Leeds. Oh, oh no.
You can't go 10 yards in Leeds without getting a burger.
That might already be the case, to be honest. You had a look at the fans. Right. Moving on, boys. Let's look at what else was played today. So, Wolves and Fulham, Drew. Mitrovic missed a penalty after like putting in a fucking world beater performance against Liverpool. Can't score a penalty against Wolves. Brilliant. Brighton and Newcastle drew as well. Good point for Newcastle, I think. Well, I think if they would Brighton and Newcastle, yeah, I was going to say they'd probably take a point if you offered them it before the game. And obviously we got Super Sunday. Are you still laughing?
I'm still laughing about I just keep thinking about
it. I can just hear you giggling in my ears, mate. You think I'm being subtle?
I just keep thinking about it, mate. It just every time I think about it, it gets funnier and funnier. just American flags everywhere,
right? Right. Tomorrow we have Forest and West Ham. Going to be a tough old day for Jay Lings.
I'll tell you what. If he scores the winner, the celebrations.
Oh, just be like, he's got to get... What is that? He does again.
Yeah, the whole Adebayor celebration, but he just does the
old thing. Oh yeah.
That's it. If he just full on Adebayor,
I can't believe I've just done that.
Runs in front of the crowd.
celebrate in front of the away fans.
Yeah.
Doing his little dance on the little flute.
We also have Chelsea Tottenham.
That's going to be a big game.
It'll be interesting. See, I've got Reece James and Chilwell in my fantasy team. So
big game, yeah.
We'll discuss more in depth.
Do any of you guys do the Super Six?
I can't do it over here, mate.
Do any of you guys do the Super Six like predictions? Sports. That game's on it for tomorrow, and I've had 2-2. I think that's my prediction for that game.
Does look like a very 2-2 kind of game, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, 2-2 or 0-0.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll end up stupid. It'll be up to like 4-4 or 5-5. Liverpool will play Crystal Palace, obviously, as I've already mentioned, in the Monday night football, which I think will be a good game. It's at Anfield. Liverpool need to bounce back, I think, and get a rhythm going before Man City beat the stretcher. We did mention today. I thought it was quite interesting that Man City's bench didn't look as deep as it normally does. And I mean that in the special circumstances of a Manchester City bench. That bench anywhere else is phenomenal.
Yeah, that bench, any of the other teams in the league is starting.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah, exactly. So I wonder if, I mean, I think we'll just get to January, and if there's gaps, Manchester City will fill those gaps, undoubtedly. I would say this should be any worry, but I do say that's maybe a weakness before January. At a certain point, if they get a couple of injuries, maybe perhaps
get an injury to Foden like, or Mahrez and have to play Grealish. God,
yeah. Oh God, can you imagine?
Oh no.
I didn't even look at getting rid of Bernardo Silva, which is ludicrous. Why would you ever want to actively?
I don't think they do want it. I just think Barcelona want it to happen and then struggle to register him for just 3 months and then.
God knows what game they're playing.
Apparently, they managed to register.
People are
going
to go to jail if they keep this up.
There's something dodgy happening there. They're just pulling, what is it, like economic levers or something?
I think they're just
selling stuff to people fund our playing squad.
We'll sell you the rights to television from the years 2060 to 2008. You're like, what? That shouldn't be allowed to do this.
Quitting?
Absolutely. And they'll try to sue Frankie de Jong, aren't they? Basically, Frankie De Jong is in a shit situation because his options are go to Manchester United. Have you seen them? And he's completely no interest in doing that. And his other option is get sued by his own club. You know what I mean? That's fucking.
Yeah, that's get sued by the club that are paying his wages.
Yeah, which he's not been paid, apparently. They won like fucking 20 million.
For them not paying his wages.
Yeah.
Have you seen apparently, PK is taking a pay cut for like the whole season or something.
Yeah, apparently he's not getting paid
PK's
a penny.
He's not going to be paid for the whole season.
Is that just the deferral like it was last time then, and he'll demand 300 million next season?
I'm sure that's what they said to Frankie before they said they've got it soon. He's going to go to Manchester United. I think PK needs to take a look around them. You know what I mean? Where is this fucking money coming from? Because they've sold everything. Jesus. I mean, the squad looks phenomenal now. It does look phenomenal.
Oh, it does look good, yeah.
Playing Football Manager on a different level. You know, that's very rare that you just... It's only Barcelona you really see this. Or PSG, maybe we just see this amount of movement and goings, outgoings. And,
yeah, but the difference is that PSG can afford it, though.
Like, yeah, they're owned by a country. Unless the country goes like,
This is the difference. Barcelona are just like rooting round the back of the sofa trying to find shit that they can sell off. Like,
I found an old Messi top that should cover fucking Lewandowski's fucking goal bonus if he doesn't score. You know what I mean?
Honestly, I want to know like how far it goes now. Like, how far does it go? Because it can't last forever. There's only so many things you can sell.
I think it's just. The people that are doing this have accepted they're going to jail in like 2 years when absolutely none of these promises have been delivered. Oh my God. I don't know why they brought in this wage cap in La Liga, right? Because La Liga was already sort of broken-ish in it, you know? And it's like they thought, oh, that'll stop them, these giant clubs, from going too mad. But what it's done is the complete opposite. It's said Real Madrid have maybe set with themselves a lot, but it's set Barcelona into a different level of stratosphere for fucking doing match. It's so good, though, man. I'm enjoying it, to be honest. Kind of got a wee bit off topic there, boys, but help but go down that rabbit hole. You just can't. As soon as it's mentioned,
no, someone mentions it, that's
you
it.
You can't not talk about Barcelona at the minute.
And I'm purposely not reading into it too much, because if I read into it too much, then it will stop being funny. But every time it seems to bring, I like the headlines. You know, I like the headlines. I don't read anything beyond the headlines. I failed to mention, obviously, talk about the Manchester City game, which I did watch a large chunk of. Just flattened, born
Haaland ridges. And his grand 11 touches or something stupid, was it?
But at the same time, he did just pull centre backs away from other
players. He's
going
to do that to everyone, though.
Yeah, and it's
he's just a lot of the time he's just going to be making those runs to just create space for your Kevin De Bruyne and your Phil Foden.
The important thing is
Kevin De Bruyne just got a sweet just outside of the boot, just curl into the far corner. Yeah, that's what he's going to do.
I was going to say the important thing about Haaland is that he may not have had a lot of touches, but the touches that he had, you know, were ones that led to goals and stuff like that. You know, if that's all he's there for, that's all he's there for. But he's going to keep on, you know, scoring, isn't he? He's going to keep on doing.
Don't
think
anybody that would like as much for me to say like more to go and criticise Haaland, but I can't because he was effective in the game. Did he influence the game? Yes, he did. Did he influence in a positive way and open up gaps in Bournemouth that maybe necessarily wouldn't have been there if it had been like a Jesus in front of him? He absolutely did. He is a machine.
Did you, just out of curiosity, did you watch when Alvarez came on?
I don't know if I'd switched over to... where did I catch? At the end of... I think I might have caught at the end of... like.
Must have been watching Arsenal-Leicester.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember much of Alvarez's performance.
I'd just been intrigued in the difference when he was on the pitch to when he was off it with Haaland. Just been interesting.
Mm. I think the game was won, so
yeah.
I think it's hard to judge Alvarez on that last maybe 10 minutes. I think Haaland came off about 80 minutes, and I think that's when I maybe switched over because the game was won and Bournemouth were just sat in a low block damage control.
Yeah.
And obviously Arsenal played Leicester today, which we could go into a wee bit more, but I've not seen the entirety of this game. Obviously, very good for you guys and your FPL, which we will come on to. We're going to finish up.
Imagine not having Gabriel Jesus in your team.
Imagine selling him to bring in.
And taking a minus four.
Simo's face. Just a picture.
Not only have you traded about, it wasn't on a free transfer. You expended points to do it. Imagine you'd done that. It's a tough old game.
My God.
It's a tough old game.
Simo,
I thought I'd maybe done well enough in the first week to make it like in the league in terms of like we have almost 200
19
people.
Points. Yeah. He scored 19 points. Jeez.
Someone triple captained him, by the way.
Yeah,
I've noticed.
That doesn't surprise me.
He's always a triple captain.
You'll see someone triple captain like
every
Trippier
player scores.
You'll see them captain Trippier against Man City, who will somehow score a hat trick.
Yeah.
And you're just like, it annoys me. It annoys me. Because there's always that one person. But
we will go deep into the FPL and an FPL episode that's coming very, very soon after the match week.
Are you sure you want to end this?
I'll be there.
Yeah,
I've
got, actually I've got, not going to be present for that one, believe it or not.
I might be off.
It's two weeks in and we've already had the funniest moment of the season.
The only thing
I've ever found funnier than that is last year my mate triple captained Kevin De Bruyne on the first week of the season when Man City didn't have a game. And his voice captain also played for Man City. That is the only thing that I've seen that is better than what Simo did.
We'll see, folks. We'll see who's laughing come the end of the season. Anyway, that is going to end it. And until next time, cheerio, bye. Sports Social Podcast Network.